Greetings and welcome to Trottle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Trottle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. The Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up for this week. And again, I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith. So after that formal introduction, which we have now every week as part of our efforts to improve our production process, or at least streamline it, so we have a formal opening and closing segment for each show. And I think it does make things a bit easier, particularly for our production staff. And so that's what we're doing. Anyway, so welcome back for this week's show. Now, yeah, there's a lot of things going on in the headlines, in the current news. I know that President Trump has just recently completed a G20 summit in Argentina. And lots of other things. But of course, as you well know, or maybe you not if you're new to the show, but for the frequent listeners, Throttle Up is a bit different than your standard talk show. We do cover current events, and we try to stay current on what's going on in this busy and complex world of ours. But we also look at things from a particular perspective, which is perhaps a bit unusual, not unique, of course, but I think it's a bit unusual that we do look at things from a critical thinking perspective. And there's, you know, some very good reasons why we do that. One of them is, of course, critical thinking and complex problem solving are now the number one sought after skill in the global job market, but also the most difficult to fill. And that was from the World Economic Forum Future of Jobs Report. So critical thinking is front and center, and it ought to be now front and center in our lives. And so, you know, I see a evolution of ideas. I see things that are, you know, in the marketplace of ideas, I see things that are dynamic, that are moving around. You might say that ideas or the marketplace of ideas could look something like a chessboard, and with 64 squares. And things are constantly moving. The game of chess is in play, and things are moving around. And I do see, not only in the socioeconomic arena, but also in business and other organizations that are formed, that are functioning, other functioning organizations, I guess I should put it that way, things are moving around. And I see, from my perspective, I see things revealing themselves that are a bit unexpected. I see things that are revealing themselves that are unusual, that are not traditional, that are a bit outside the box. You could say that there is some innovative approaches that are being proposed in this idea marketplace. And so we have, you could say two traditional ways of thinking, if you will. We have the liberal point of view, which we will cover in some measure of detail on this show. We have the liberal point of view, and we have what is often called a conservative point of view. And so both of those, you would, I guess we could lump those into the category of ideology. We have the liberal and the conservative, although I don't think they are equal opposite ideas. I do think that if you considered the conservative point of view, you could see that there is something that is or let's put it this way, there is an aspect of the what you would typically call the conservative point of view that is not necessarily sociopolitical. There is an aspect of it that gets to the heart of reality and human existence. I don't believe for a moment that this country was founded based entirely upon a political point of view. I don't believe that. I think that this country was founded based upon a thorough historical examination of what worked and what didn't work in the course of human events. And based upon that historical point of view, that understanding, that broad understanding of human existence, I think that there are things that have been put in place in this country and enshrined in our Constitution that are, let's you say, are the best way of saying this is that they are what we could consider to be best practices. Okay, so we have some structural components, we have some broad ideas, we also have some best practices. And best practices really are something that's now becoming more and more popular. As I travel around the world, I realize that best practices are catching on across the world. It certainly is catching on in this country, in the business community, in the military, and other places. And so I think that the conservative point of view embraces or should embrace what we could call best practices. And now best practices emerge from a particular mindset. If you're a student of Colonel John Boyd, like I am, you realize that he started this movement, if you will, some time ago. It was, I would say, roughly speaking, it was in the 1980s and the 1990s. He passed away in 1998, so it was, we could say the 80s and 90s, perhaps even the 70s, 80s and 90s, where he developed his ideas. And so best practices is becoming the wave of the future. And best practices emerge from a particular way of viewing reality, and that is defined, albeit a little bit loosely, but it is defined as critical thinking. And so critical thinking leads to best practices. Best practices leads to an optimum situation by which meaningful and productive activities can emerge. So that's the whole idea. Now, so this, you know, this long, rather long discussion is leading us somewhere, hopefully. hopefully we're leading us somewhere. So what are we trying to get at? Well, the as you know, Throttle Up is typically organized into three segments or three parts. Part one is a ongoing discussion of critical thinking. And so that's what we're talking about here. All right. We're talking about, you know, and when we talk about critical thinking really is a rich subject. It's a broad subject. It's rich. It's full of a whole bunch of exciting and new ideas that come from it that it is based upon. And so we discuss it often because it's such a rich subject, and I think it's not only it's important, but I think it's interesting. And it's a different way of looking at the world. It's a different way of understanding our place in the world. It's a different way of understanding reality. And it's also refreshing to look at things from that perspective. Critical thinking, I think, is a refreshing way to think. It's a refreshing way to accomplish things. Be surprised at what you can do if your mind is organized in such a way as to be effective and productive. And critical thinking gives you that. And critical thinking, as you know, and complex problem solving go hand in glove. One means essentially the same as the other with some relatively minor differences. But complex problem solving is more of an action-oriented aspect of critical thinking, where critical thinking is setting the stage for a productive engagement. Complex problem solving is actually producing something. And what does it produce? Complex problem solving produces a solution, produces an optimum solution from all possible solutions so that we can perform well and achieve mission success. And so what is going on that we can then apply our, we put on our critical thinking hat or thinking cap that says critical thinking on it? What can we do? We can do almost anything. And today we're going to be looking at various aspects of critical thinking as it applies to this phenomena that is going around the world, the phenomena that we call or is embodied in this gentleman by the name of Jordan Peterson. Jordan Peterson is quite a worldwide phenomena. His book, 12 Rules of Life, has sold over 2 million copies, and he's currently on a world tour, and I've read his book, and I highly recommend it. All right, but what can we do with that? While it is interesting, and you might say even entertaining and enlightening, what exactly can we do with the Jordan Peterson phenomena? All right, so it's more a phenomenon. Now, Jordan Peterson is a person who embodies that or is a manifestation of this phenomena, but he's not the only manifestation. I think others manifest the same thing. What is the phenomena? Okay, so that's something for all of us to consider, and we ought to write it down in our journal or wherever we write down things. I write them in a journal myself. And also I have an electronic journal as well as a paper and pencil journal. So what can we do? So I label this area of thought as understanding the mind space of a social justice warrior. And that's what Jordan Peterson is confronting and what led him to global recognition is he is challenging the thoughts and ideas of the social justice warrior crowd. And he began this this engagement with them, often hostile engagement with them, in Ontario and in Canada. He's a Canadian, but he also went to school here in this country. I think he went to undergraduate school here at Harvard. But so he started this, or you could say that maybe he didn't start it, but certainly he became influential in this movement, which is loosely described as confrontation or challenges to the mind space of the social justice warrior. Now, what exactly occupies the mind space of the social justice warrior? And that's something that is particularly important for us to understand if we are going to engage ourselves in any kind of, you know, activity, any kind of discussion, when we encounter social justice warriors, and of course they were all over the place, particularly on college campuses. Even if it's a chance encounter, are we equipped to handle that hostility, that barrage of victimization, that barrage of ideas that deal with class warfare? And so we can take some lessons from, you know, the pages of the Jordan Peterson operating manual. I say that metaphorically, but let's see if we can understand what the Jordan Peterson operating manual is, what is contained in such a manual. And, you know, in where I come from, there are these operating manuals. We often call them flight manuals or flight operating manuals and stuff like that. Where I come from, in my, you know, in the profession that I was in and still am in some ways as a consultant, as a design consultant. But anyway, what is the Jordan Peterson operating manual? Well, let's examine that. Now, here is a good case in point, if you will. Here's a good example of what is contained in the Jordan Peterson operating manual with respect to confronting how to confront the arguments that are put forth by the social justice warriors. So here, Jordan Peterson confronts a liberal feminist that is employed by the British GQ magazine. Not sure what a feminist is doing employed by a Gentleman's Quarterly magazine, but but I guess the world is kind of strange. Anyway, so as a critical thinker, what exactly are we dealing with? What is the mind space of a liberal social justice warrior? And how do we respond? Not in the conventional way, but how should we respond to these arguments in a way that evokes critical thinking? In other words, do these arguments, or do any arguments for that matter, pass the critical thinking test? And what exactly is the critical thinking test? What is that critical thinking filter? So if we pass an idea through the critical thinking filter, what is the essence of the idea when we strip away all of the unnecessary baggage and get rid of the noise and the grit and whatever? And so what is the essence of the argument? And that is key. So clarify is particularly important. So we're going to clarify the actual, and we're going to do that in a way that helps us understand this world that Jordan Peterson is confronting on a regular basis, as well as the world that we occupy, and we may very well be confronting these very same people. Jordan Peterson starts out this interview by saying the following. He says, "You are living, you, or we could say we are living," but he was talking to this feminist, so we could use the first person. "You are living in the greatest society ever, and if this is the product of a tyrannical patriarchy, why is it so good?" The feminist reply is, and this is, of course, this is really instructive here. The replies from the feminist, who is also a social justice warrior. She says that life is good, but I think it could be better. Okay, so here you have the beginning of a very convoluted discussion here, and a convoluted set of ideas coming from the social justice warriors. So keep that in mind. You'll notice that there are a lot of things here that are being discussed that are incoherent. But that's not particularly unusual, but it is incumbent upon us as critical thinkers to recognize when something is incoherent. Now, we could also use that or apply that to ourselves. We want to be good, solid, critical thinkers. So when we encounter that incoherence in ourselves, of course, we need to make some self-correction. And that's okay, all right? None of us are perfect, and I do that frequently. I correct myself because I realize that some things that I said or did didn't make a lot of sense. Okay, so the basic idea put forth by Jordan Peterson is that we are currently enjoying the greatest society that has ever existed in the history of mankind by all kinds of measures. And how is that the result of a tyrannical patriarchy? Okay, now keep that phrase in mind, the two words, tyrannical patriarchy. And that's what the social justice warriors put forward. Again, the responses by the social justice warrior feminist is that life is good, but I think it could be better. Okay, so sure. I mean, everything, you could say that about anything. It's good, but it could be better. That is such a weak statement. Okay, and so what? Sure, anything could be better, possibly, theoretically. Nothing is the ultimate. I mean, we're dealing with humanity, and humans are not particularly perfect all the time. Neither is their organizations. Jordan Peterson, that is a reasonable proposition, but how could this come about as a result of the tyrannical patriarchy? And the feminist response to that is, why not? Okay, so here you have the first incoherency emerging in the social justice warriors' arguments, which is that they have to acknowledge the fact that this modern industrial society, which does not exhibit any kinds of malnutrition or starvation or disease-ridden or whatever, life expectancy, and all of that stuff, they have to acknowledge that because it is so obvious, it's painfully obvious, all right? So their position is, yeah, but it could be better, but it is still whatever is good could be better because it is the product of the tyrannical patriarchy. Okay, so her response is, why not? All right, so that, you know, of course, Jordan Peterson is thrown aback by that. He can't quite fathom somebody saying that. All right, so Jordan Peterson goes on to say, how could it be good if it is the consequence of something tyrannical? Tyranny isn't good, Jordan Peterson says. That is the definition of tyranny. Tyranny is something that isn't good, and yet it has produced all of these good things that you are grateful for. Doesn't that contradiction bother you? Where does that which is good come from? And this is the, you know, hang on to your seats here, okay? Because this is the response from the social justice warrior feminist. Quote, I think I am benefiting from a lot of things that I actually do not deserve. That was her response. She went on to say, unearned privileges in my life. Peterson says, like your job, feminist says, I have a very good job. I have a loving family, which I do not deserve. That was her statement. Peterson, that is a heck of a rationalization of your life. You could trade it off with someone less privileged. The feminist response, of course, this is amazing. I could, but I do not want to, and I won't, and I am not expected to. Okay, so she is not willing to trade places for those less fortunate, and yet she is railing against the system that has produced all of these unfortunate people, except for herself, who doesn't happen to be unfortunate, but she cares for those who are. Okay, so that's somehow, that's the logic of this, which is convoluted. Jordan Peterson, why not? Is it okay for you to occupy a position of privilege in the patriarchal tyranny? And if so, is it because you are female, or is it because it is convenient? Her response, and this is hard to follow, I'll try to do my best. I am a social democrat, so if you have a good life, I believe you should pass it on. I believe in a progressive redistribution of wealth, the tax system, for example. Lord Mendelssohn said that New Labor was okay with people being filthy rich as long as they paid their taxes. Okay, so that's okay to be filthy rich. Peterson, define filthy rich. They are the top 1% of the people who have ever lived on the planet. Where is something or other? Where is it exactly? The feminist. Well, I am not able to help the Neanderthal at this point by giving up some money, but this is what I believe in. What I believe in is the structure in which people who have had a good life and have lots of advantages should pay that back, pay that forward. And I think that is the message that you reach as well, that you have responsibilities, and if you had like us and you, and then she trailed off. Jordan Peterson, I do not regard the civilization that we live in as a tyrannical patriarchy. The feminist, it is not purely a tyrannical patriarchy. Jordan Peterson, that's for sure. Is it purely not? And that's exactly the issue. When you describe it as a tyrannical patriarchy, then you make the case that it is purely that, and that's exactly why you are ungrateful. It is not purely that at all. The feminist response, which begins to become more and more incoherent, she says, not purely what is being said. Peterson, that is not what is being said. That is that it is purely a tyrannical tyranny. I'm sorry, purely a tyranny. To define it as a patriarchy implies unidimensionality. And to insist that it is also tyrannical does not offer a balanced perspective at all. Feminist, that is where our disagreement comes from. I do not see it as unidimensional at all. Okay, so I know this is a little convoluted, and it's hard to get this across because you're dealing with the mind space of a social justice warrior, which is occupied by things that we simply don't understand, and we cannot fathom their point of view or their perspective or their understanding of reality. Their understanding of reality is different, and it is. For most of us, it is foreign to our way of thinking. Peterson, let us continue. Peterson, then why call it a patriarchy? The feminist, because it describes an overarching structure. Peterson, does it? Feminist, what would constitute a patriarchy? Gender, profession, social constructs? Peterson, so you think that a dominant social structure is based primarily on gender, and if that was equalized, then that would be better. The response by the feminist is incoherent. But she continues, so you say that women wear rouge is because it reminds men of ripe fruit. So they're continuing their discussion, and so they're jumping around because one train of thought leads to a dead end, wherein the social justice warrior is simply stymied by the logic of and the critical thinking ability of Jordan Peterson. So here you're jumping around, and it's difficult to. You know, to follow these interviews because people jump, and maybe that's intentional to keep jumping around to things to throw people off balance. I don't know. Maybe that's a technique that they learned in social justice warrior school. I don't know. So they got onto this discussion that deals with, you know, women and feminism and stuff like that. And Jordan Peterson writes or says something about that. And the feminist is then raising this question to Peterson, which is, so you say that women wear rouge is because it reminds men of ripe fruit. Peterson, why do you think that women wear rouge? Feminist, and this is, of course, hard to believe. Feminist, I have absolutely no idea. Okay, now, that's simply not true, but you see what's happening here, all right? So the feminist does not want to admit that there is a biological distinction that is relevant. So she says that. Peterson's response is that is not a very good answer. The feminist counter response, but you said before that you don't have an answer to everything. And of course, now the argument gets convoluted. And then it continues after some incoherency, it continues into the area of why ripe fruit? Not all ripe fruit is red. And now we're degenerating into silliness, right? And so most of what follows after that is silliness and incoherence. And then Peterson talks about the reason why rouge is red, and they got into some silly discussions. There's some good biological reasons behind Peterson's ideas. And then finally, the feminist says that I wear makeup to stop the comments from coming if I didn't. Okay, so here you have someone who doesn't want to wear makeup, but somehow is forced to wear makeup because of some possible negative comments. Now, you see what's happening here? So her position now is so incoherent that it's starting to become painful to observe, because her whole mission in life is social justice, and to point out the negative behaviors or the illegitimate behaviors or the inappropriate behaviors of others with respect to the precepts of social justice. But here she admits that her behaviors are designed to be convenient for her and don't have any overarching considerations concerning position, concerning fairness, concerning justice, and what have you. And so now most, if not all, will start turning this off and going to some other subject or going to some other channel. But then they got into something that is particularly important. And Peterson gets into this a lot in his discussions and in his book. And it all centers around lobsters and hierarchy. And so this discussion, and a lot of it was incoherent from the social justice warrior standpoint, but Peterson was trying to make a biologically sound argument using biological science of why hierarchies exist in the animal kingdom when we are part of that kingdom. And they are not social constructs. They are natural hierarchies that have a rich historical perspective, and they're almost entirely biological rather than sociological. And so that became a rather interesting discussion. I'm not going to get into this, but in conclusion here, when we let's say when we venture out into the world, we have to be prepared. We have to anticipate certain encounters that may not be very pleasant, either directly or indirectly. And we have to feel comfortable with the fact that we can think critically. We can examine things from a critical thinking perspective. And then we can understand them there and understand the validity of the argument, understand the viability, the utility of the argument, the utility of the position, understand whether the position is a beneficial one or whether it will do harm. Now, a lot of positions are claimed to be beneficial but are not, and that's where critical thinking comes in. It enables us to distinguish between the truly beneficial things and the ones that are fake. And lots of things that are being presented are fake, and we have to be aware of that. So we have to be armed with our weapons to defeat fake propositions, fake proposals, and stuff like that will ultimately do us no good and, in fact, do us great harm. So we have to be, when I say do us great harm, I'm also talking about not only us, but our families and our communities. Lots of things that are being proposed will be or have proven to be harmful. And so we have to be able to distinguish that. And that's why our power of reason, which is powered by critical thinking, is so important to us and to our families, community, and our country. All right, so we're going to take a short break, and we will be right back. Okay, welcome back to Cuddle Up, and this is our part two now, our storyboard. And we talked quite a bit today about the social justice warriors and how to deal with their arguments. Where are they coming from? How Jordan Peterson phenomena is emerging, because he is now in the forefront of this effort to confront the arguments that support the social justice warrior movement. Now, in this part, we're going to be looking at briefly, but we are going to be looking at where does all of this come from? This thing that we call social justice, the social justice warriors, radical feminists, and all of this stuff. Where does it come from? Where did it just emerge out of the ether, or was there some things from a historical perspective that we can understand and we can make better sense out of this situation that we encounter in our modern industrial world? And these are the strange ideas, these unsettling ideas, this position that a lot of these people take that try to convince us that there's something wrong with our world. There's something wrong with the way we have organized ourselves in America. There's something seriously wrong about it. And their job is to point this out and to propose solutions to these ill-conceived ideas and these wrong applications so that they can produce a better world than the one that currently exists and the one that was produced by our forefathers. All right, so where does it come from? Well, it comes from what we could call Marxism. Now, it goes by a number of names, and as Peterson often points out, we have to be very clear about the words we use. We have to be very clear about our descriptions, and we have to eliminate all kinds of fuzziness in our thinking and be very clear and be very precise, or as precise as we possibly can. Now, Marxism comes to us from a number of different or has a number of different names associated with it. Marxism, neo-Marxism, socialism, and communism are all basically the one and the same. In this book, Communism, a very short introduction that is published by Oxford University, it has a very good description of Marxism. And it goes on to say this: much of what is usually called classical Marxism was in fact based on the ideas of Marx himself and his colleague Friedrich Engels, but Marx was the dominant partner. As with any thinker, it's important to locate Marx in time and place. He was born in what is now Germany, though he spent most of his adult life in England at a time when the Industrial Revolution and development of capitalism were already underway in Western Europe. It was also a time when the ramifications of the French Revolution were still being felt throughout Europe, and there were several other revolutionary phases during his lifetime, notably in 1830, 1848, and 1871. Marx was fascinated by these various revolutionary situations and believed he could discern patterns in historical movement. Now, Marx's materialistic view of the world is closely related to his historicism. His combination of the two explains why his approach is so often described as historical materialism. For Marx, the driving force of history is class relationships. He defines class in terms of a person's relationship to the means of production. Crudely, this means that most people's class position is determined primarily by whether or not they own property, particularly property that can generate wealth. Thus, in the feudal system that preceded the Industrial Revolution and the emergence of capitalism, the most fundamental class division was between those who owned land and those who had to work for those who owned land. With the advent of the spinning jenny, the steam engine, and other inventions of the Industrial Revolution, the most important class division became that between those who owned factories and those who worked for the factory owners. Marx called the former capitalists or the bourgeoisie and the latter the proletariat. So in other words, Marx's view of the world, and this holds true today, is that the primary structure of humanity was class distinction and class struggle. The struggle was between the bourgeoisie, literally those who owned property, and the proletariat, literally those without ownership. And so that was it. All right, so Marx's view of the world, a view of reality, was binary and very simple, a very simple binary system of human existence, the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. Now, since then, neo-Marxism has expanded their definition, just a little bit. They still believe in that, but they also believe that there are other groups, and group identity is the primary driver of human behavior, not individuals, but groups, and group distinction and victimhood with respect to groups is the key that drives all of human existence. And so it's a very simple, very materialistic view of reality. It does not embrace anything beyond materialism. And by definition, it doesn't intend to, it doesn't believe in anything beyond that. But this book goes on, it's actually quite fascinating. And it goes on to say, however, Marx believed that the era in which he was living was different from all previous ones in two ways. First, the class structure of capitalism was becoming simpler in that within each society, even more clearly dominated by just two main classes. Second, the class struggle under capitalism would be primarily between the bourgeoisie and an increasingly alienated proletariat. Or so Marx believed in class struggle as the primary driver of human behavior. All right, and so that's what the social justice warriors are all about. They're about class struggle, victimhood, class identity, and the victimology or the inappropriate behavior that produces these large groups of victims, right? That completes our show for this week. And because I've run out of time, again, I get talking and working a subject, and there's just so much to deal with, and I try to put it into some kind of a coherent structure. And often I'm a little bit over in my thoughts, but in any way, that completes this throttle up for this week. Before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here, and I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service. And I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.